In 1966, David Plant moved from the United States to London and met Nico Stangos, who became his partner. They set out to create a life together, and they developed friendships with writers and artists and thinkers. Well, he's kept a diary for more than 50 years documenting his life. It's stored in the Berg Collection of the New York Public Library. And his latest book, Becoming a Londoner, A Diary, is the first volume of those diaries and focuses on his first two decades in the British capital. It's both a personal memoir and a cultural history. Bloomsbury has published it, and excerpts have appeared in The New Yorker and The New York Times Book Review. Mr. Plant is the author of 9 novels, 3 works of nonfiction. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much.
So do you have to go to the New York Public Library to gain access to your own diaries?
I do, and it's a very, very peculiar situation because there is my life in a public institution, but I don't really have access to it. I have to be very, very careful. They're not very keen on my diminishing the what they consider to be research material.
Even though I wrote.
So I'm not allowed to have a pen, for example, just in case I write something in a notebook in which I have written.
What prompted you to start keeping a diary 50 years ago? Did you see it as a writer's journal or as a strict diary?
I saw it as a way of accommodating the world. I considered it a way. I'm very possessive. I'm a very possessive person. So to me, it was a way of possessing my experiences by recording them, accounting for them. And the more I became possessive, the more the diary became possessive of me. There's something Henry James said, one is possessed and one tries to possess one's possession. Well, my diary is that. It's trying to possess me. And why I started was to try, and I realized that I can't feel that I've lived an experience unless I've recorded it.
But you were also writing other things while you were writing this diary, including
yes.
novels, and you've written memoirs as well. So have you used these diaries as references?
Oh, often I take use them as basics. I wrote a novel called The Family, about my family, but I took that from the diary, indeed. Another novel called The Country comes entirely from my diaries.
You allowed Nikos to read it, so this is not the kind of diary that you prevent everybody from reading.
Well,
did you always intend it to become a public document?
Yes, in some way. I always intended it to be read by someone. Nikos would read it, and he'd write in the margins, "You've got this all wrong," and he'd write little comments to correct me. Yes, because I would explain who was who. So if I mentioned, Jean Rhys, I would sort of try to identify Jean Rhys.
In case people don't know who Jean Rhys is.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, she's gone in and out of public consciousness, but I think most people who would read you would know who Jean Rhys is.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned many times that you're just trying to describe things, people, places, conversations, events you went to. Were you trying to keep emotions out of it?
I was trying to keep whatever is subjective out of it. You see, if you say, write about someone, I liked him or I disliked her, that doesn't bring the person into the room. What you've got to do is find a detail. I was saying, just thinking the other day, meeting someone, a woman who had this marvelous way of touching her lips very elegantly. Well, that brings the person alive. So you find the telling detail, which is going to bring the person as much alive as possible.
And I'm assuming you have applied that rule to your other writing as well.
I have. That came to me very easily. Description comes to me very easily.
This book is about your time from 1966 to 1986 in London. You still live there. What led you to move to London? Did you want to leave New York for good?
I fell in love. It's as simple as that. I fell in love with London. I fell in love with Nikos. I was 26. He was 28. And yes, that was the basis. But also, the difference between New York and London was I had lived in New York. I wanted to be a writer in New York. When I mentioned that to anyone, the first question was, have you published? In London was, how interesting, what are you writing? And I thought, that's a difference I appreciate.
Well, we have produced some pretty good writers, and a lot of English writers have wound up moving to New York.
That's true.
I guess they felt that New York was was perhaps more welcoming.
Right.
You write that you don't think that you could have been a couple with Nikos in Athens, where he was from, or in New York, where you're from. Did London offer a new life for both of you?
Oh, it was that time when things were liberated in the 60s.
This was when swinging London
was swinging London, and one could walk along the King's Road and find people dressed as though for theatre. They were performing, and things opened up. Suddenly you'd find nudity in the shop windows, and you think, well, why didn't that happen before? Why has that been such a revolution? You know, revolutions don't occur out of an ideology. They come out of a mood, and the mood in London was of liberation.
But London was still affordable in those days.
Ah, yes.
And London has become more conservative and a lot more expensive.
That is true. My our rent was £14 a week, if not a month. 3 shillings, which is, I think, 15 pence now. That was an expensive taxi drive.
A shilling was 14 cents U.S. dollars.
There it is. Any case, that seems like ancient history. No, it's incredibly expensive now.
In just the first 20 pages of this book, you mentioned meeting a number of famous people, including the artist David Hockney and Henry Moore. And then they led you to meet Stephen Spender, who was...
No, I met Nikos. I met Stephen Spender through Nikos. They had been friends. Nikos was in the press office of the Greek embassy, and he had come to London with a lot of names given to him by a Greek poet named Nanos Valoritis. And he looked up Stephen, and they became friendly. So I met Stephen through Nikos.
My guess is David Plant, who has been nominated for a National Book Award, even though he lives in London. He's the first volume of his diaries just been published in this country by Bloomsbury. It's called Becoming a Londoner. So one of the things that I discovered when I lived in London was that it was a smaller city culturally, even though it has a lot of people. It was easy to meet almost everybody if you knew about 3 or 4 pubs. In New York, that is impossible.
That has changed in London. When I first went to London, it was very natural to go to a dinner party and you would meet Iris Murdoch or Angus Wilson or whomever, artists and writers and sometimes politicians. There was a woman named Sonia Orwell, the widow of George Orwell, who had what was considered something of a salon. And you're absolutely right. If you met someone, you met everyone. But that's gone in London as well, that connection.
It's become diffuse. It's no longer a small town, at least culturally.
It's become, yeah.
And you met Francis Bacon, although he lived most of his life in North Africa, didn't he? He used to come to London just to prepare for his next show.
No. He lived in London in a mews called Rees Mews above a garage, a very tawdry place, really.
I'm not surprised.
No, it was very typical of what Francis Bacon might have lived in. But... I have various anecdotes about Francis Bacon.
Including something that happened in the south of France, an accident with a
yes,
truck.
Well, yes, that was very telling. Francis Bacon and George Dyer and Stephen Spender and I were in the south of France and driving around and came across a crossing where a lorry had crashed and with lots of pigs in it. And the pigs were lying all around the road, bleeding or dead or whatever. And Francis looked out the window with great alertness and said, "How beautiful."
And if it were today, he would pull out his smartphone and start taking pictures for his next series of paintings.
Right.
Now, when you were reading over these diary entries from 50 years ago, were you surprised by some of the things you found? Or did you remember most of them?
No, I'll tell you, the memory is selective, and it's selective to protect oneself from things that one does not want to remember. And there are a lot of things one does not want to remember, but I can't do that. My memory exists outside myself. And yes, a lot of it is very, very shocking.
To you.
Shocking in the sense that...
Was I really like that at that time?
Exactly. Or? Did I do that? Mm-hmm. Did I? You see, if you're going to keep a diary, you do not keep a diary to justify yourself. That is a criminal, as it were, if whatever it's criminal or not for a diary keeper. But no, one doesn't try. One tries to tell the truth. And yes, that's what I do. And a lot of the truth is not very pleasant. I've not been an altogether pure person.
You wrote a book called Difficult Women about your friendships with Sonia Orwell, Jean Rhys, and Germaine Greer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you realize when you first met these women that they would become so important in your life?
No, no. They gathered importance. I was slaughtered for that book in England. Vivian Gornick gave it a marvelous review here. That was 33 years ago. But in London, I was slaughtered. And it was the height of feminism. And as a feminist friend of mine, Ursula Owen, said, David, why did you write a book at the height of feminism called Difficult Women? So I was slaughtered.
Germaine Greer has been a guest on the show, and she accused me of paternalism because I said I was opposed to genital mutilation. She said that I was imposing Western attitudes on African women. I don't know whether that is the height of feminism or not.
No, it isn't. But the thing about...
But she is a difficult woman.
Oh, she's a very difficult woman, and she's marvelous for being difficult. And I'll tell you, the thing about Germaine is she turns over every received idea. She cannot bear received ideas. So, what she might have said in her first book, The Female Eunuch, she would turn against because it became too generalized.
Nikos worked at the Greek embassy in London when you met, but then a military coup...
That's right.
Led him to lose a job. He wound up becoming an editor at Penguin.
That's right. Poetry editor and art and architecture. And it was an extraordinary thing because he had no experience in publishing. He was British. He was not British. He was Greek. And his first language was Greek. He went to an interview with the founder of Penguin Books, Alan Lane, and he was hired. Well, that was... One of those fortuitous things that happened in our lives together, which one accepted at the time, but in retrospect thinks, how totally amazing.
Now, a number of the people you write about, you could just as easily have met in New York. W.H. Auden, who lived in the East Village. Philip Roth.
Yes.
Was it different meeting them in the London context or European context?
No, again, because there were connections. The way I met Philip Roth, and I'm sure he won't mind because he said this publicly, is that he sent me a fan letter for Difficult Women and suggested that we meet. And he said, I will absolutely understand if you don't want to meet. And I thought, well, why should I not want to meet Philip Roth? And we became very friendly.
He said that Updike and Bellow held their flashlights out into the world, but that he dug a hole and shined a light into that hole.
That's right. That's right. That
and he said you do the same sort of thing.
Indeed. That is from my diary. I keep Philip knows I keep my diary, and he'll say, this is between you, me, and your diary.
This book ends in the 1980s, after that that free period in London. Now we're talking Margaret Thatcher. I'm assuming there'll be another volume somewhere down the line. Will it be a very different London?
I've written another volume, which brings out some of the characters I introduce in the first volume into a fuller realization of life and the times. And then I've finished that, and I'm working on the third volume.
Well, you do mention that Nikos died in 2004.
Right.
Do you think that you might have left London if you hadn't met each other?
Well, you see, I'm British now, but I'm American as well. Obama is my president, and the Queen is my queen. So it's a difficult balancing act. Now, this is a bit of politics, but if the UK withdraw from the EU, I'll leave.
Well, if you'd stayed in this country, you probably would have discovered that many Americans were just as obsessed with Kate Middleton's baby as people in Britain were.
Right, right.
I'm not sure that those boundaries haven't been more blurred than I might even like.
Well, they have been very blurred, yes, indeed.
David Plant will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 8 o'clock at the New York Public Library.
Sorry, may I correct 7 o'clock?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
And they'll let you in.
I hope so.
He needs a library card to gain access to his own diaries that are kept at the New York Public Library. The library, of course, is at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. And his latest book is Becoming a Londoner, a Diary. It's published by Bloomsbury. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much indeed.